The following shiur has been presented by Rav Shmuel Binyamin Honigwax, Dayan at the Beis Havad, and has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center.
Gemara Nazir Daf Yud. The Mishnah says, Amar Amar Paro Zuharini Nazirim, I met this Ani, Oimer Adalas Hazarini Nazirim, Niftach Ani, Beishamei Oimer Nazir, Wissol Oimer Ani Nazir. There's an argument between Meshameh and Bishol if a person says a very strange thing. A person says, that this para, this cow, that was in front of him lying down on the ground, said, I'm going to be a Nazira if I stand up. Or the door said, I'm going to be Nazira if I get opened up. So the Gemara explains that we understand the person's intention to be, that the person is saying that I'm going to be a Nazir if the door doesn't get opened up. And the argument between Meshameh and Bishol is that Meshameh said that what happened is like this. The person had a cow in front of him that looked like it was never getting up. In his lifetime, this cow would not stand up. And he had a very frustrating door in front of him that refused to open up under any circumstances. And the person said, I'm certain that this cow is not going to stand up. I'm certain that this door is not going to open up. And I'm going to be a Nazir if it does not stand up. Or I'm going to be a Nazir if it does not open up. The person was so frustrated, he said, I'm going to be a Nazir if this cow doesn't stand up. So the argument between Meshameh and Bishol is that we're talking about a situation where the person said this, and then the cow ended up standing up on its own. The person didn't even have to pick it up. So Meshameh says that the person's main intention was that if the cow doesn't stand, if I can't pick up the cow, if I can't get the cow to stand up, then I will be a Nazir. And in this case, I was not able to get the cow to stand up. The cow ended up standing up on its own. And Bishol say no. The person's intention was that as long as the cow doesn't stand up at all, I'll be a Nazir. But if the cow eventually stands up, whether or not it was through my actions or not, I'm not going to be a Nazir. So the argument is how to interpret what the person's statement, under which circumstances did the person intend to become a Nazir. But everybody agrees that if his condition was fulfilled and the cow did not stand up according to Beis Shammai, if the person was not able to raise up the cow according to Beis Shammai, or if the cow didn't end up standing up at all according to Beis Hillel, then the person will become a Nazir. The Ramban in the Tshuvas asks a question. The Ramban wants to know, we know as far as transactions between people is concerned, there's a halacha called asmachta. If a person sells something to somebody, and he stipulates a certain tenai, a certain condition that upon which the sale hinges, the halacha is that there are many tenoim, many conditions a person can make, which will not just obviate the sale if the condition was not fulfilled, but they will cause the sale to be invalid completely. And this idea is called asmachta. If a person makes a condition where the person, I'm going to explain asmachta according to understanding of most rishonim and according to the way we paskin, Ashkenazim paskin lalocha, the way the Ramah paskins, the way the rishonim explain it is, if the person makes a condition which he was confident would not be fulfilled, at least he felt strongly and he was hoping that the condition would not be fulfilled, and because of that, He made the sale hoping that the condition upon which the sale hinged would not be fulfilled and the sale would not end up taking place, so that even if the condition is fulfilled, we say that he was not Gomer Das, he did not have a full intention to sell because he was counting upon this condition not being fulfilled. That's how the Ramah explains the Din of Asmachta. The Rambam and the Mechaber of Shulchan Aruch explain it differently, and we'll get to that soon, Mir Tzashem. But first let's explain what the halacha of asmachta is according to the Ramah. According to the Ramah, there are three different cases where you can have asmachta. You can have asmachta, there's three different kinds of tanoim. One tanai is where I sell something to somebody, I sell a person a house or a field or something like that, and I say, if I do something, then the sale will be valid. If I don't do something, the sale won't be valid. So we're talking about a case where I made the condition dependent upon something that I, the seller, will do or not do. So in that case, the Ramah says that it depends. If the sale if it makes sense that the sale should be completed if this condition is fulfilled, then we say that's not considered gozim, it's not considered an extreme kind of punishing condition. In other words, the person is not trying to punish himself for what he does or doesn't do, but it's something which would make sense according to the, you know, based on the context of the sale and the context of the and the nature of the condition which he put into the sale. So in that case, since everything makes sense, so we say, and because this condition is 100% within his ability to fulfill or not fulfill, so we say that this person was serious about the sale, he was serious about the condition, everything makes sense, so that would not have a din of asmachta. The only time that there would be a din of asmachta, even something which we call biyadai, which is within his hands to fulfill or not fulfill, would only be if the person seemed to have been punishing himself for fulfilling or not fulfilling that condition. In other words, if he made a sale which is absolutely not commensurate to the condition which he imposed over here, so it seems that he's trying to punish himself for something he does or doesn't do, in that case we would say he didn't really intend to do it, he was just trying to create a threat which would stop him from doing or not doing that action, and therefore we say he didn't really intend to complete the sale. That's the case of biyadei, where the action is totally under in the person's control. Then there's something else called biyadei v'la biyadei. It's a little bit biyadei and it's a little bit not biyadei. It's something which he hopes and really thinks that he's confident that he could fulfill it, but we know that it's not totally under his control. The example given by the Rishonim is if a person guarantees somebody that he'll be able to get him a certain deal on wine, he'll be able to buy wine at a certain price. And he says, if I don't buy it, I'll have to pay you back the price of this profit that you would have made had I gotten the wine at that price. In other words, the wine, I'm promising to buy wine in a certain place that, for a low price, and you'll gain money because of the fact that I was able to buy it at that price. And I say, if I don't fulfill my side of the deal, I'll pay you whatever your loss is. So the Gemara says that has a din of asmachta. Even though over there, it's not a punishing kind of transaction. In other words, I'm just compensating the person who sent me for the loss which he suffered because of the fact that I was not able to buy the wine at that price. Nevertheless, we say that does have a din of asmachta. I didn't really intend to obligate myself to pay that amount of money. Why? Because since, even though I thought that I would be able to get and complete this deal, however, since there are sellers that this deal depends on, and if they choose not to sell to me, I won't be able to buy it, so therefore, it's not 100% within my power to complete this deal, and therefore, I never really intended to complete to be obligated to this person if something out of my control ends up happening and I'm not able to complete the deal. So therefore, that will be a second case of asmachta, something which is biyadei and a little bit, and not completely biyadei. Such a thing would not even depend whether or not it's a punishing kind of transaction or not. But under all circumstances, that will be an asmachta. The third case is something which is completely out of my control, such as a person who gambles, for example. He makes an obligation or a transaction dependent on something which is not in anybody's control. Let's say he makes it depend on some act of nature or something like that, or whether or not somebody wins the gambling game, which in some cases is just completely luck and absolutely not dependent upon any actions which the people will be taking. In such a case, that it has even less of a din of asmachta, because we can't say that he counted on something when he obligated himself. We can't say he was assuming that the certain thing would happen, an act of nature would happen, or he was assuming that he would win the gambling game because he had no reason to assume that, since it was absolutely not within his control. So we have no reason to say that this person thought he was going to win, and therefore it must be that he was gamer das, that he completely and fully obligated himself with sound mind to pay the money if he loses. There is, however, one thing that this obligation will not be able to accomplish. The Rama says that Bezdin will never be moitzi mamon. Bezdin will never force the person to pay for losing the game. And that's why the Rama says that if a person plays these kind of games, you have to make sure to put the money in a neutral place that belongs to both parties, so that the winner won't have to force the loser to pay. Because if the winner does force the loser to pay, even if it's not embezzled, then we say that is a little bit like stealing, midrabanan, because the loser was not obligated to take the money out of his pocket and pay. Like we said, Bezdin will not be mechayev him to pay. So therefore, since he's only paying the money out of duress because the winner is putting psychological pressure on him to pay the money, therefore the kinyan of the money between the loser and the winner is not a good kinyan, midrabanan, and therefore it's a little bit like gezel. So a person has to make sure to put the money on something which belongs to both parties before they begin the game. And this is actually a question in the new the Pogs game from the twins from France. Everybody knows that all the children in Lakewood nowadays, as I say this year, are very, very busy with this game. And it may be a question of gambling, and you have to know if it's good for the children to play such a game. Well, Maisa, at the end of the day, these are the three situations of Asmachta. So Ramban, and now, the Rambam and the Mechaber of the Shulchan Aruch hold that every kind of condition that you make is asmachta, and there's ways to take care of asmachta, which we're not going to go into, which in some ways are easier according to the Mechaber and the Rambam, but they don't agree with these three hagdaras that the Rama says, and they believe that any kind of condition that you make in a sale or an obligation which is not transpiring right now, but will transpire later at the time of the fulfillment of that condition, such a condition is considered an asmachta. Regardless, the Ramban asks a question in our Gemara. He asks that when a person says, when a person is frustrated with this cow and he thinks the cow is not getting up, and the person says, I'm going to become a Nazir if the cow doesn't stand up, the Ramban asks, you should have a problem of Asmachta. Now, it's not 100% clear to me how this works with the various opinions of Asmachta that we gave. Certainly, according to the Rambam, this would have a din of asmachta, because the Rambam says that any condition has a din of asmachta. According to the Ramah, I'm not sure whether this tnai would have a din of asmachta, according to Beis Shammai. Because Beis Shammai according to Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai say that the person's intention was to make the condition dependent upon whether or not he himself is going to pick up the para. So according to Beis Shammai, I don't understand why. We can understand that this will be considered asmachta, because the person was confident that he would not be able to pick up the parah. However, according to Beis Hillel, since the person is making the condition dependent upon whether the parah gets up on its own, I don't know whether that would be able to be considered asmachta, since he's making it dependent upon something which is not necessarily in his power at all. But we could say that since the person is also involved in picking up the parah, the person maybe does intend to, the main smichas das of the person is on his own action, whether or not he's going to pick up the parah. Regardless, the Ramban asks this question, and he says in his teretz something which is a very big chiddush in asmachta, and it's very negeya halacha l'maisa in most contracts and agreements between two parties. This halacha l'Ramban is extremely, extremely relevant, and for many shtaras and contracts written up in Bezin. The Ramban says that from here we see that Nazirus does not have a din of asmachta. And the Ramban extends that not just to Nazirus, the Rishonim and the Poskim extend that to Shavua. Anytime a person makes a Shavua, there's no din of asmachta. And any neder to tzedakah, anytime a person promises money to charity, to tzedakah, or if a person makes something hektish, all these things will not have a din of asmachta. The Shulchan Aruch Paskins, Simereish Zion, Sif Yotes, Neder Ushvua Utkias Kaf, Neder or Shavua, swearing, or tkias kaf, a handshake, mahani afil basmachta. A handshake is considered to a certain extent, or maybe more than to a certain extent, like a shvuah, like swearing. When a person shakes hands with somebody on something, it's considered like swearing. And such things don't have a din of basmachta. Now the Rama says a few very important words. He says, va'ayin lekamon simen reish tes siv dalet. And then he says, so we'll talk for in a few minutes about what it says over there. V'cheinim kasuv b'shtar. The Rama says also, if it says in the shtar, kibal Allah v'cheirim chamer v'shu d'raisa. If the person writes in the contract, I accepted upon myself this tonight, this transaction with this stipulation. B'cheirim chamer, with a chamer de k'cheirim, u'v'shu d'raisa, or with a shu d'raisa. So that also works, just like if he had actually made the shvuah. If the person says, writes in the shtar, that I accepted upon myself all the conditions in this shtar with a cheirim and with a shvuah deraisa, even though the person didn't actually swear, the halacha is that there's no din of asmachta in this shtar. Ukemoishin is bar leil simen zeh sif tezvav liyim bez mechashiv. Even though someone argues on this halacha that I'm saying. So, we see a very, very important halacha in the Ramah, and this is what Bezin does all the time nowadays when they're writing up contracts, that if it says in the shtar that the person accepted upon himself all the terms of the contract and the transaction and whatever is happening over here with a shvua, then there's no din of asmachta. So this is a very easy way around asmachta. We write in the shtar that the person admits that he swore in Bezdin, even though we know, everybody knows he didn't actually swear, the person admits that he swore in Bezdin, that may be enough. So now comes along the sma and says that he brings down that the Maram Padva that the Ramah is quoting actually has a suffix about this, whether or not writing in the shtar, even though the person didn't actually make the shvur, whether or not that works. And the sma says that the Ramah is deciding that the halacha is that will work, even though the person didn't actually make the shvur. However, the Ktzais argues that even if the Sma is correct in what he's saying, that wouldn't apply to where we know that the person didn't even know what it said in the Shtar. Many times, this clause where it says that the person accepted upon himself with a Shvur, that says in the small lettering, or maybe not so small lettering, but whatever it is, it's not within the main body of the Shtar, and if the person can prove that he never read that clause in the shtar, and he didn't know that it said in the shtar that he admitted that he made a shvua, then that shvua certainly will not be binding on him, and there will indeed be a halacha of asmachta to nullify this transaction if the laws of asmachta are applicable. He brings down that the Noidiv Yehuda argues and says that the Noidiv Yehuda says that even if the person can prove that he didn't know what it said in the shtar, the halacha would be that the fact that it says in the shtar that he admits that there was a shvua and the person signs at the end of the shtar or Adam sign upon his instruction, that admission would remove the problem of asmacht over here. And the Ktzais and the Nesivas both say that this question, and also the question of whether or not writing in the shtar, even if he did see what it says, but he didn't actually make the shvua, will hinge upon another question. So the Ktzais discusses only his situation where the person can prove that he never actually read that part of the shtar, but the Nesivas says that the entire halacha that the Ramah said, that even if the person never actually made a shvua, he just signed the shtar which says that he made a shvua, that will remove the problem of asmachta. This halacha that the Ramah says is very, very dependent upon a very lumdisha question of why shvua takes off the problem of asmachta. Like we said before, according to the Ramah, the problem of asmachta is that the person never really intended to go through with the transaction. He was always counting on the possibility that he would be able to get out of the transaction by keeping his side of the deal, by keeping his side of the condition, and thereby being able to nullify the transaction. Now, when something beyond his ability came about and caused him not to be able to fulfill his obligation over here, and then according to the contract he was bound to fulfill the transaction, the person never really intended for that to be the situation, and therefore the person never had gemuras das to fulfill his side of the transaction. So says the Sma in the Sif Cotton before this, that he holds that the idea that shvur works to remove the problem of asmachta is not because the person swore and therefore the person is obligated to keep his shvua because of the halacha in the Torah that a person is mechuyev to keep his shvua. Because that halacha would not apply to his children. If a person, chas shalom, passed away before he was able to sell the field to the person or to pay the money that he owed, then his children would not be mechuyev to keep his side of the bargain. Because since the actual transaction didn't take place, because it was a problem of asmachta, the only reason why we're saying he has to keep his side of the deal is because he swore that he would, and he's obligated by the Torah to fulfill his promises and his shvuos. So therefore, his children are not bound at all by a shvuah that he makes. If the transaction had actually been finalized, and the person actually owed the money, so then his property would be held in lien by the person to whom he obligated himself, and then his children, when they inherited the property, would be obligated to pay from the property that they inherited because of the lien which was placed on the property. However, since in this case the actual hischaivus, the actual obligation, never took hold, it's just that he was obligated to keep his word because of the shvuah that he made, because he swore to keep it. In such a situation, the children after he died would not be, his children after he died would not be obligated to keep his side of the deal. So the Sma says that when the Rama referenced Simon Reish Tes Siv Dalad, that's what the Rama meant, because over there it says that the person's children are not obligated to keep the father's deal under certain circumstances. So the Rama meant that in this case also the children would not be obligated to keep the deal. However, the Sma goes on to prove that that is not the case, and he ventures to say that perhaps the Rama didn't even mean it. And therefore, the Sma argues that over here by Asmachta, that line of reasoning doesn't apply at all. He says, since we're explaining that the whole point of why Asmachta doesn't work is because the person didn't really intend to do it, if the person swears that he's going to do it, and now we know that the person is now bound by the laws of the Torah which say that he has to keep his word when he swore to it, so the person knows that he's going to have to do it, so now that removes the problem of asmachta, because now the person can't argue that I never really intended to keep my side of the bargain. Because we say, of course you intended to keep your side of the bargain. You actually swore to it, and you knew that you would be bound by that shvuah. So the Sma says that therefore, it's not just that the shvuah obligates the person to pay the money. He's actually obligated by monetary law to pay the money, because the kinyan which was made with asmachta works as long as we know that he was serious about it. And since he swore that he would keep it, we know that he was serious about it. The Shach brings down that the Bach argues, and the Shach agrees with him, and so too the Taz argues on the Sma, and they are all of the opinion that shvuah does not remove the problem of asmachta as far as monetary law is concerned, and shvuah does not cause the kinyan to actually work. Shvuah doesn't cause the transaction to be binding on its own merits, and the only way shvuah works is because the person has to keep his word and do what he promised to do, and therefore his children will not be obligated to do it. So the Nesiva says that this argument is the basis for the argument that we spoke about before. We spoke about a question whether or not, if the person didn't actually make the shvuah, he just signed in the shtar that he made the shvuah, whether or not that would work. So the Nesiva says that depends on this question. Why does shvuah work to take care of the problem of asmachta? Does shvuah work because, regardless of what happened monetarily, the person is obligated to keep his word? In that case, if the person didn't actually swear to anything, he just signed on the shtar, which says that he admits that he swore, that doesn't have any binding power in the halacha of shvuah. In order to be considered a shvuah, a person has to actually swear. A person can't sign on the shtar that I admit that I swore. That has no power and no validity at all in the halacha of shvuah. So if the whole reason why he has to keep his word is only because he swore that he would keep it, and the Torah says that you have to keep what you swore, so then that wouldn't apply if the person didn't actually swear, he only signed that he swore. However, the Sma over here that says that even if the person did not actually swear, he just signed in the shtar that he swore, so that also takes care of the problem of asmachta. The Sma is going l'shitase, he's going because of his previously recorded opinion that the Sma holds that the shvuah takes care of the problem of asmachta completely, even as far as monetary law is concerned. And it causes the transaction to be binding in and of itself. Therefore, the Sma holds that even if the person didn't actually swear, as long as he admitted in Bezdin that he swore, so Haidas Baldin Kmei Einim Dami, since he's admitting, and he's being Moide in Bezdin, in the Shtar, he's being, by signing the Shtar, or by instructing Einim to sign the Shtar, he's admitting that he actually owes the money. Why is he admitting that he owes the money? Because he's admitting that he swore, and therefore the Kinyan of Asmachta will work, so therefore, and just like we all know that if a person admits that he owes money, even if Edom will come and say that he doesn't owe the money, the person will nevertheless be obligated to pay the money, because his own admission is more powerful in Bezin than the testimony of the Edom, of the witnesses. So therefore, if a person admits in Bezin that he swore to keep this transaction, so then we know that the person is admitting that the transaction was actually binding, according to the Sma. Because since according to the Sma, once he swore, the transaction is binding in and of itself. So when the person admits that he swore, he's admitting that the transaction was binding. And therefore, Idaspal didn't tell us. His admission tells us that he actually did the transaction in a way that worked. So therefore, the Sma says that even if the person didn't actually swear in Bezdin, even if he can prove that he didn't actually swear in Bezdin, it's not going to help. Because he admitted that he is obligated to the other person. However, according to the other opinion, the majority opinion, which we paskin like, that holds that the shvua doesn't strengthen the kenyan, and the shvua doesn't cause the transaction to work in and of itself. According to that opinion, if he didn't actually swear, the fact that he admitted that he swore won't help at all. So therefore, in our shtaris, we don't have an easy way to get out of asmachta using this halacha in the Shulchan Aruch, according to the majority of the opinions.
The Daf Yomi Halacha series has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center. To sign up for the Halacha Center's weekly interactive e-journal, please email subscribe to info@thehalachacenter.org.